Before we get started with today's show, I want to tell you about another great ESPN podcast, Baseball Tonight. The Baseball Tonight podcast with Buster Olney is back Monday through Friday. Be sure to check out his episode with Dr. Anthony Fauci on the feasibility of having a full baseball season and what he would tell players about being vaccinated. Buster also speaks to World Series winning manager Dave Roberts and his counterpart in the other dugout, Rays manager Kevin Cash. That's the Baseball Tonight podcast. Listen to that and the right time and subscribe wherever you get your podcast. Also, Stephen A's World streams weekdays on ESPN Plus, bringing fans Stephen A. Smith's entertaining perspective and deep expertise with signature guests. The best interviews with Stephen A's World are now available as a podcast every Wednesday. Listen wherever you get your podcast and watch Stephen A's World on ESPN Plus. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. Coming up on this episode of The Right Time, we are going to talk about a PSA that NBA players don't want to help out with and how ridiculous that is. Deion Sanders, who may or may not have been robbed this weekend. But first... All right, now, guys, I understand that by the time most of you listen to this, this story will not, like, be new. You understand what I mean? It is not necessarily the kind of story that you expect to be at the top of this podcast, because we try to hit you at the top. But what's topical and most recent, right? Because, yeah, you know, y'all want to get what's hot in these streets. We try to get that to you. I'm going to be perfectly honest. Ain't shit hot in these streets right now in these sports. You know what I'm saying? Like the football season has kind of ended. We're in the middle of the season of the NBA. I don't know what else I can possibly say about the Brooklyn Nets, right? But something happened over the weekend that was just so damn exciting that somehow it managed to become polarizing. And a lot of you guys know exactly what it is that I'm talking about. And I am talking about that time in that game in Minnesota where Anthony Edwards went baseline and yammed on Yuta Watanabe in a way that I have not seen a player of Anthony Edwards' size yam like that on a player of Yuta Watanabe size since I don't know if I ever have, to be perfectly honest, right? Like, I was thinking about this, Gabe. You're a Bay Area guy. You remember when Baron Davis cocked it back and yammed on Andre Kirilenko in the playoffs that year?
Yes, I do.
Oh, that was incredible. And if you saw it live, like, it's one thing to watch that on replay, but if you saw it live, it was so violent what he did. Like, the idea that he just like, oh my goodness. Like, people don't dunk like that when nobody's around. Like, he did that with the understanding that the only way I'm going to punch this through is by yamming on this dude as hard as I can. He could have shot a floater, but why do that, right? By the way, always remember, the Baron Davis that you saw for most of the time in the NBA is the one after the knee injuries. My goodness, that dude was a problem. Goodness. Anyway, Anthony Edwards went baseline. And he took off on Yuta Watanabe. And I'm just telling you right now, this how you know that you can't be out here believing in stereotypes. Because clearly, Mr. Watanabe did not read the scouting report. Clearly, Mr. Watanabe did not do the math. He hesitated. He came over. And all that was there for him was an end scene. End scene. Like, I'm going to ask you guys a question. It's a serious question. When's the last time you saw somebody get yammed on and the dude who did the yamming just smiled? After Anthony Edwards yammed on that dude, he couldn't believe it. He felt so good, right? And he was torn because he wasn't necessarily playing so well in the game, right? He was torn. He didn't know how to play it. He didn't know what to do. I knew what to do. Scream. That is what I did. I am pretty sure that is the first thing that I saw when I looked at my phone on Saturday morning. And what a way to start the day. Only for me to find out that there were people who were actually out here poo-pooing it. Right? Dude, Nate Duncan. I don't know Nate Duncan, but, you know, Twitter know. You know what I'm saying? Nate got up and said he felt it was important to point out while everybody was talking about that dunk that Anthony Edwards only had 7 points and did not make any of his 3-pointers. It was some other dude from Cleveland I saw who came out here and made the same point. Even Bucci, man, the homie John Bucci Gross here at ESPN. He was on the, like, only scored 7 points, a dunk is only worth 2 points program. And I just have to ask, how were y'all raised? Like, your parents aren't embarrassed by this, right? By hearing you take this approach. This does not bring any shame, any scorn to your familia. Look. This is why I have a problem with people getting on the it's only 2 points kick. Me and my brother were talking about this the other day. Clearly, it isn't only 2 points, right? Because if it was only 2 points, you wouldn't feel the need to point out that it was only 2 points. It is 2 points in the stat sheet. But for those of us who can appreciate this big old world of context, right? Who see this all as a mosaic with lots of things are bouncing around there. It is clearly more than 2 points because 2 points don't get people that excited, right? When people make two free throws, it's not that exciting. It is every day. What Anthony Davis did, the closest thing that we could say to that is when DeAndre Jordan did that to Brandon Knight. But the thing about that, again, of course, is DeAndre Jordan is 7 feet tall and Brandon Knight is like 6'1", right? What made that one so terrible was that he actually knocked the dude out of the sky. Like, it looked awful, but it wasn't this. Like, I don't know how many people knew Anthony. Like, I was talking about this also, me and my brother. When Vince Carter was in college, we thought that dude was 6'9", 6'10". Because anytime, you know, we didn't get to watch that many full games back in the day. Anytime we saw Vince Carter, he was doing some kind of dunk that required you to be a lot taller than he was. Like, that was how we saw it. I saw that, and I thought Anthony Edwards was like 6'7", 6'8". Like, that's how high he went up. Aaron Baines, the most dunked on man in NBA, standing in the paint, smiling, looking at it. Like, wow, that's such an amazing thing. And I just can't imagine being somebody who is a fan of basketball and seeing something like that and trying to find any way possible to diminish it. Like, that just confuses me. And the reason that this gets me, like, so charged up when I talk about it is all this stuff is ultimately supposed to be fun. I've seen people say this on, you know, on Twitter and stuff, and they're like, yo, there's people who watch basketball and people who fill out spreadsheets about basketball. And I understand that that feels like really condescending and pejorative, but there's really something to that. There really, really is. Like, to me, particularly with basketball, and I think we can do this kind of across the board with all the sports, but particularly with basketball, we have got guys that make clear and obvious functional contributions to winning. And we also have guys who may not necessarily make that same contribution to winning, but are just a lot of fun to watch. And somehow we act like there's something wrong with being fun to watch. Like, you know how people talk about, you know, like you don't want to like becoming your parents, like the Progressive commercials? What it seemed like is a bunch of y'all have become your coaches, which is far, far worse. Far, far worse. So let me throw a player out here. This is not even like the in the dunk space, right? Just a player to throw out here. Carmelo Anthony. All right. As a functional contributing basketball player, like contributing to the bottom line of whether or not your team wins, Carmelo Anthony is an overrated player. He's not a bad player. He's a Hall of Fame player, right? But Melo was never going to be a guy that you rode to a championship. Like, if there was a mistake in the Knicks making that trade for Melo, is that they viewed Melo as the kind of player, you start with this guy, and then we just work everything else out. No. That wasn't what it was going to be. Like, as an offensive player, not quite efficient enough, and certainly as a defensive player, not quite defensive enough. Like, all of those things are fair. But I'll be damned if Melo wasn't fun to watch. He could carry you to a college championship, but he was never going to be the guy to carry you to a pro championship. And for whatever it's worth, I think the Nuggets were like 25 games better his first year when he got there. Now, granted, George Karl also got there replacing, I think, Jeff Bezdelic, right? Like, they made a lot of changes. But Melo was fun to watch. Like, when I hear the Knicks fans who hate Melo, I'm like, dude, y'all are going about this completely the wrong way. He made you watchable. Like, no, he was not the superstar player. Yes, you guys got way too excited about the prospect of having him. But your disappointment can't take away from the fact that watching Melo, like as a show, was enjoyable. Okay? Now, you hear people say all the time this idea that the NBA regular season doesn't matter. Okay, but it's still fun. Like, if your requirement for enjoying things in sports is that they matter, you are doing yourself a grand disservice, especially considering the fact that this in total doesn't matter. It doesn't. But a guy like Melo, like when the Knicks weren't good, enjoy the guy you got, right? The guy you got is enjoyable to watch. Right now, Minnesota is terrible. There's kind of no way around that. They are terrible. But Edwards, who, by the way, outside of that game had been playing pretty well, okay? Edwards is something to look out for. Edwards got personality. Edwards is all day long Thorough High School, Atlanta, Georgia. If you don't know, ask your friends from Atlanta. But all of that, like if I'm a Minnesota Timberwolves fan, Gabe, you let me know if I'm tripping. If I'm a Minnesota Timberwolves fan, all the games we out here losing, you think I worry that Anthony Edwards only scored 7 points? That moment was the most joy they have had since KG left.
Just for reference, everyone, after Bomani said that, he immediately took a long swig of water and stared into the camera.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, since 2004, when has NBA basketball brought you, Timberwolves fan, greater joy than watching Anthony Edwards yam on Yuta Watanabe?
Kevin Love post-ups weren't that fun.
Nope. They didn't do the job. Ricky Rubio's wraparound passes, they didn't feel the same. By the way, let me tell you how surprised people are that it's a Japanese basketball player. Actually, there are two, don't forget. We got Rui Hachimura in Washington. People so surprised that it's a Japanese basketball player that I had somebody say something about him having an African name.
You know what? When we started the podcast, because I knew this guy was Japanese, when you said his name, because I didn't know his name, I immediately thought, is Bo talking about the wrong guy?
I have to say, man, we've been doing this now, what, 3 years?
Yeah.
That right there is a great moment in the development of our relationship that you felt comfortable saying, yeah, man, I didn't really know either. Like, that's a growth moment for us.
Yeah, it's an interesting last name.
Yes. But no, man, dunks are great. Seeing people get dunked on is incredible. It is, you know what's so great about watching somebody get dunked on and what makes it just so rare? It's guilt-free violence. Like, it's violence without the violence. Like, you think about this. The way that you respond to somebody get yammed on is not terribly different than the way that we used to respond when football, when we would see somebody get jacked up. Except the difference is, we ain't have to go, damn, is he okay? You know, like that Sean Kemp dunk on Alton Lister. That was violent. Like the best dunks where you've seen somebody get dunked on. The only one that I'm really like off the top of my head that I look at like an incredible on you in-game dunk that did not come with this kind of feeling of violence is when Dr. J rocked a cradle on Michael Cooper. Which there's an argument, you know, the game has evolved, so forth and so on. But there is an argument that is the best dunk of all time because for a brief moment, Michael Cooper thought, I'm going to try to jump. And then he said no, and then he covered his head. Like the idea that he had to cover his head makes it incredible. But that's what this is about getting dunked on. It is the physical challenge of basketball that plays out at the rim. The one thing I do think that like all the Herbs out here that was worried about the fact that we was caring too much about 2 points. Here's what I don't think we do enough. We don't give enough credit to cats who go up and send the dunk back. Those are the real heroes. Like, one, you can get your arm broke. Right? Like let's not get this twisted. You can get your arm broke out here doing something like that, going against the wrong guy. If you try to dunk on somebody and your dunk gets sent back, nobody really thinks about it or remembers it, right? but you get yammed on, and you are Yuta Watanabe. Now, I will say this, to be fair. If Anthony Edwards had tried that and Watanabe had sent it back, oh, no, no, no. We would remember that. We would always have that one in mind. We need more of these, right? That's the thing, Herbs. If you want to acknowledge fundamental play, right? If you want to acknowledge people playing hard when they don't have to and sacrificing their image in these moments, then give more props to the people who send dunks back. That's how you'll get that done. But in the meantime, we gonna be over here giving props to the people who make us feel good. Now, Gabe, I know that you were expecting me to probably take a little different tack with this, weren't you?
Yeah, maybe just a little bit, yeah.
You thought that I was gonna say something about short people. Okay. I've been accused of being an ableist and being a bully because I, like, needle the little homies every now and then. And I want to be clear about something. Something I said on my podcast, The Evening Jones, the other day, and I'm going to say it now here. I recognize my privilege, okay? Like, before the growth spurt, I was not tall, and then things changed, right? But I recognize my privilege. I understand that the world opens up for me in a way that it does not open up for you guys. I understand that there are things that for you often feel out of reach.
Literally and figuratively.
I get that. And more importantly, I understand that for every one step I take, you got to take two. I get that. I do. However, when I get to talking about stuff like these dunks and we start taking a survey of the people who are inclined to, like, not talk about dunks and think that they're only 2 points or everything else, very, very few of them have ever been able to even go so far as dream of dunking a basketball. Okay? And you can ask people who follow me on Twitter. Whenever somebody gets all charged up about these things, and I'll be like, yo, how tall are you? I'm hardly ever wrong. I was going to say never, but while I did not say to Nate Duncan, you must not be very tall, I thought to myself, he must not be very tall. Incorrect. Nate Duncan is 6'6", per the internet. Which leads me to but one conclusion, or maybe not a conclusion, but a question. Who dunked on you, Nate? Right? Who dunked on you? And then you was like, oh, it's only 2 points. Like, it's only 2 points is something that people tell themselves when they've been on the wrong end of something like that. Maybe a coach told you that to try to make you feel better. Hey, buddy, it's only 2 points. And I don't know if this scenario has ever actually played out with Nate, right? I'm just telling you that when you hear something like, it's only 2 points, that just feels like something you say to reassure someone or to reassure yourself. And you're right. On the scoreboard, it's only 2 points. And at the end of the game, they hit the switch and that scoreboard turns off. And we go right back to talking about you getting yammed on. Oh, man. I always enjoy those. Anyway, Gabe, I don't know if you've seen this, but the NBA is trying to put out a public service announcement to encourage people to get vaccinated. Which, I mean, while I am sure the NBA believes that this will just be a good thing for our nation, this also accelerates the path to getting people into those arenas spending too much money on that food. Right. So they're like, yo, we want to do this PSA. And apparently they've been reaching out to the star NBA players. And they have been met with a measure of reluctance to do so. Yeah. there isn't really a great micro level analysis of what exactly the issues are for the players. Of course, many believe, and Adam Silver has said this before. He's like, in the African-American community, there's been enormously disparate impact from COVID, but now somewhat perversely, there's been enormous resistance in the African-American community for understandable historical reasons. If that resistance continues, it would be very much a double whammy to the Black community, because the only way out of this pandemic is to get vaccinated. And while I generally get a little bit uncomfortable when white folks be talking about us in those kinds of terms, he's absolutely correct. Right? Like, I thought that that was the best way that one could possibly put it, right? That being said, I ain't so sure that all these white dudes is necessarily that excited about getting on board with the vaccine either. Like, Gabe, if someone told you that Gordon Hayward had a principal objection to taking a vaccine, would you be surprised?
I wouldn't, because there are a lot of anti-vaxxers.
That's all I'm saying. That's what I'm saying, is that there's a world of white people who also have this measure of skepticism on certain things, right? Like, that's, it happens to be that the league has Black people, but I'm not absolutely positive that, you know, whatever white person you pulled up would feel the same way. But while I'm here talking about Gordon Hayward, I brought him up to bring this up. Did you see the voting for All-Star starters?
I didn't.
All right, so for All-Star starters, apparently they got like this weighted formula now. There's fan voting, there's player voting, and there's media voting. Okay. In the front court in the East, Gordon Hayward was ranked 7th by the media, 9th by the fans, and 15th by the players. That is a giant chasm, sir. A giant chasm in perception.
Isn't like the one thing that really people kind of hold above all else when they look back in their career, like, did my peers respect me?
Right. And apparently not. And apparently not. Like, I mean, look, media, fan, player. That list is also in, like, you can look at it as increasing levels of Blackness or decreasing levels of whiteness. But as Gordon Hayward gets farther away from home, the perceptions of, I mean, it's still crazy that it didn't work out for him in Boston. That just, you know, people have been figuring out what's going to happen for, like, it just made too much sense. And then he gets there and it, didn't happen. The rabble rousers won. But anyway, with this PSA, here is what worries me about advancing the idea of this skepticism that Black people have about being vaccinated. And I'm not saying that the skepticism does not exist. Like, I'm not purporting that this is some sort of myth that the white man has pushed upon us or anything like that. I want to be clear. Like, I mean, I've seen it in different places. I do wonder, by the way, on this, and I think it's a fair point. I don't think it's necessarily that conspiratorial. But again, this is where the Facebook thing comes in. And like the spirals in places that people then wind up in, you do have to wonder in a way who's being fed what information and by whom, like who's making the calls, you know, and, you know, whatever's being put out there. Cause I'm sure there are people hearing things that are like flatly scientifically nonsensical in this. Like, I, you know, but if you go look at these maps about who is and isn't vaccinated, like there was one I saw in the New York Times about New York City, and you can look at it by zip code, and the darker the blue on the map, the more people who were vaccinated. And that blue just got lighter and lighter as you went uptown and got real thin once you got north of Central Park. And the distribution mechanisms that are being used are poor for a number of reasons in the way that they do it. But here's the thing. If you're a Black person, you understand that this is how the game typically goes. They generally don't even need no factual reason to do us wrong, you know? But if they get out here and it's like, yo, Black people don't really want the vaccine, it then is going to become even harder for the Black people who do want the vaccine to get it. Because say they got 100 boxes of the vaccine. 100 is just a random number, right? Like, say they got 100 vials of the vaccine and they can only give them away in one neighborhood. But if they take the 100 vials of the vaccine into a neighborhood and whatever doesn't get used, but like this, whatever doesn't get used in those 100 just gets thrown away. They're not going to bring the 100 to us. Why not? Well, you know, they don't even really want to be vaccinated. Oh, okay, cool. You see what I mean? There's a danger, and I'm torn on this. Like, I don't know what to do, because there does seem to be a factual basis for the idea that a lot of Black folks are skeptical about taking the vaccine. So I do think that it is fair and appropriate to like write about it and to report it and to discuss it. And in a lot of ways, I think you hope that by doing that, at least some, I hope, right? Some of you, you know, disagree with me on this, but I hope that somehow the reporting will lead to larger discussion, which then can lead to some discussion that leads to, you know, more people being vaccinated or more people dropping their apprehension about vaccination. Like, you would hope that. On the other hand, I do feel like there's a lot of, and not, by the way, this story was written by Adrian Wojnarowski. I do not think that Adrian is doing this. Like I hate to be that I know him guy, but no, I know that dude. I'm not worried about him. I just don't want any misunderstanding about what I'm saying about, you know, the story or about the idea. This is much more macro. And there's an air in a lot of it of, why are these Black people being so stupid? You know, and you kind of have to do that when you have to, like, that's why people start explaining the historical stuff that comes behind it, because otherwise people are looking at it like, that doesn't make any sense. And to be fair, they look at the anti-vax white folks that say that stuff the exact same way. The difference is, when we talk about the anti-vaxxers, we say the anti-vaxxers are being ridiculous. When we talk about this, we say Black people are being ridiculous. And that's a huge distinction. You know what I mean? Like, when the anti-vaxxers pop up and have whatever they, you know, whatever they want to get on, nobody says, well, there's a huge portion of the Caucasian community that is averse to taking vaccines. That's not how they put it. They are their own group. And so nobody is referring to these Black folks who feel this way as like Black anti-vaxxers. Because look, and let's be clear about this part too. A lot of the Black folks who have their concerns, like, historically, fair. That ain't all of them though. Like, there's a whole lot of people that's going to give you an explanation that gets real silly real fast, right? I even say with the history stuff is a little shaky, right? And the reason I say that it's shaky is, this is not comparable to the Tuskegee experiment. So the Tuskegee experiment, I don't know, I can't remember if we talked about this on here. People had syphilis. They told them that they were treating the syphilis, when in reality, they were just out here messing around and seeing what would happen to somebody who had syphilis. That's a different animal than what we're talking about here, which is receiving a vaccine. Like, I would have more of a skepticism if I had COVID-19 and they say, well, we got some experimental stuff that we want to try on you. Are you down? Okay, that's Tuskegee. You see what I mean? Like, that sounds like that. This other thing, I told you the solution. Go get in line behind some white folks. Right? You're going to have to get us all. If this is what it's going to be, you're going to have to get us all. Maybe that, you know? But I think it's important that we be careful in the way that we discuss this. Now, I'll tell you something else I find to be interesting about this thing with the vaccine. I don't know if you saw this, but Bill Russell and Kareem got vaccinated in part because they wanted to show people that getting the vaccine was safe. And let me tell you who really ain't sweating these conspiracies that hard. Old people. Old people like, look, if this gonna mess me up, I ain't got that much longer anyway. I might as well take the chance.
Their sources are rock solid.
Yes. Yes. Now, I will say this also, though. Like, I do think that there are plausible, like, medical reasons to be concerned about taking the vaccine. So, like, for example, pregnant women, don't blame you at all. Like, we don't know that much ultimately about what it's going to do. And so I think someone raising questions and asking those questions is totally fair in that case. I do think they're going to use this to kill us. You know what else is killing us? COVID-19. And that was Adam Silver's point, which he really phrased delicately to be like, you want to die from COVID or you want to die from the shot pit? But the truth is, what Silver said is right. The only path to us getting back out for real is vaccination. And for the players, I mean, it'll make their lives a whole lot easier if they get vaccinated, and they got to get people in the building. Like, this is a serious financial hardship that can be taken care of by people getting vaccinated. And so they're going to have to do that. Right? Now, the players, do you have to do the PSA? I don't know, but I'll tell you this. When that PSA comes out, don't think I will not be checking for who's not there. I want to know who you are. I'm just curious. Think Kyrie going to be in it?
Yeah, I was going to say, who's the first round draft pick?
For not being in it?
No, for being in it.
Oh, LeBron James.
And then who's your first round draft pick for not being in it?
Kyrie, no question.
I'm not going to be in a PSA with no LeBron.
No, not because he ain't going to be in no PSA with no LeBron, because he got some theory. That's why Kyrie not going to be in it. Hit the music.
Thank you for your patience. A representative from the right time will be with you shortly. Your current hold time is
15 seconds.
So now that you know that, Gabe, who's your number one pick to not do the PSA?
I think I might have to try and trade up in the draft order.
That's what I was thinking.
See, like, if I can get ahead of you.
Woo! Anyway, but yeah, I hope, like, this is what it's going to take. This is, it's simple as that. This is what it is going to take. We've had these things happen before. You know, we had polio. Don't forget about that. Polio was out here in these streets. Measles, all this stuff. Like, yo, man, and that's going to be the other part of it, too. This immunization may require people to keep on going back. Like, we don't know that, like booster shots and stuff. And that's what worries me, because every now and then, one of these old school joints makes a comeback. Like, every now and then, you look up in the newspaper and be like, yo, somebody got the whooping cough. Yo, can you imagine what it was like when the whooping cough was out here in these streets? Yo, but like, I don't even know anything about the whooping cough other than apparently it makes you cough whoopy. I don't know anything else about it. How bad must the cough be? It's not a symptom. It's the whole damn disease. You know, measles been making a comeback. I feel like I heard about somebody getting the mumps one time. Like, all this stuff that's just not supposed to come up anymore be out here making comebacks. And I just don't know if people got it. Go get a shot and keep getting them, please. All right, I'm going to do this awkward thing and try to talk about Deion Sanders at Jackson State. And I always feel weird when I get to talking about Deion at Jackson State. And the reason is, I feel like a killjoy sometimes. You know, because I don't feel like most people who are talking about this issue really know anything about it. Like, about HBCUs, just generally how they run, the scale, everything else. I just don't think that most people really, like, get important parts of the context, I would say. And I think that people overall will evaluate Deion Sanders' success at Jackson State according to different metrics than I will. I don't care if Deion gets 4-star recruits to come to Jackson State. I really don't. I don't care how many games they win. I kind of care how much money he can make for the school, because I guess that would be a good thing. But like, my concern about him going there has always been that I think that Deion Sanders is going to be in that job for Deion Sanders more than he is in it for the players that he is going to coach. And what makes for me, and I know this is somewhat idealistic, but it's largely true, what makes the HBCU environment special for me and mine is what it did for us as students. You know, what it did for us as members of that community. And Deion Sanders' entire professional track record, is Deion doing things for Deion. And that's not to say that Deion has not done plenty of things in his life to benefit other people, right? He has not served as a mentor for younger folks, right? It's not to say that, I mean, I don't know anything about who he gives his money to or anything else. I'm not saying that he ain't never done a damn thing for anybody else, but I do know he has done a hell of a lot to make things about him, right? Like that's the whole creation of the primetime character and everything else, making things about him. When he had that school in Dallas, it was called Prime Prep. Like not even your actual name. You know what I mean? Like that's branding. And so he's down there, you know, he got the Under Armour deal for Jackson State, you know, Barstool's down there, you know, because he works for them and they filming, you know, stuff and everything else around it. In a way, that's going to promote the brand of Jackson State, but that's promoting the brand of Deion Sanders. Like, let's be honest about this. What value is it to Jackson State to promote your brand at Barstool? You know what I mean? Like, that's not where your people are. That's not your folks. The winner there will be Deion Sanders. It will not like increase applications to Jackson State unless there's some kind of joke that gets, you know, pulled off about that. That's just not what it's going to be, right? And that's not, in this moment at least, that's not shade to Barstool, but that's branding Deion Sanders. And what I think Deion's going to find out, and I think I talked about this before, and Mystical had that line, I might not mean nothing to you, but I'm the shit on this label. I don't care what none of y'all think about Jackson State. Jackson State thinks very highly of Jackson State. Jackson State alums are an incredibly proud group of people. That is a football program that has 1, 2, 3 Hall of Famers. Four. I think it's 4 Hall of Famers. You know, they did some things before Deion Sanders. Like Max Kellerman said something on First Take yesterday, and it bothered me. Like he didn't, I mean, he said something about how Deion is bringing a new standard to HBCUs. And I was like, with all due respect, what do you know about the standard? Like, what do you know about the standard? What do you know about the history other than a couple of lines? And like, what do you know about what's really going on here? You know? And so they played this game against Edward Waters. And I understand, again, a lot of you are not like especially familiar with HBCUs. They're weight classes in our world too. They're the schools that play in Division I, which is the SWAC and the MEAC. You got leagues that play in Division II. And then I don't really know too much about like Division III, but you got a lot of schools that play NAIA. And Edward Waters is a school that plays NAIA. So where Jackson State has 5,000 undergrads, Edward Waters has like 1,000. And so they came down there, they played Jackson State, and they got beat like 53-0 or something like that. Which, for what it's worth, is probably what Jackson State should do when they play against Edward Waters. Like, that was as close as you're going to get to a paycheck game at that level as possible. The storm had hit Jackson, too, so it was frozen over there. There was no running water in the stadium the morning of the game, and they still played. Come on, that's ridiculous. I think they were expecting, I don't know what the attendance ultimately turned out to be, but they were expecting 10,000 people to come to that game. So I guess they look at it as, hey, man, we got to get this bread if we can get this bread. But can you imagine showing up to work? They'd be like, they ain't no running water and you stayed? Playing a football game and ain't no shower? Yo, okay. But, you know, they went out and they played the game. And then we get the press conference. So post-game, Deion comes out and Deion say he pissed. That's a quote. He said he was pissed. Apparently he said that his belongings had been stolen out of his office. Took the stuff off, put it in the bag, put it in the office. And he says his stuff got stolen while the game was going on. And he was like, I just had a great moment. I'm in the locker room, teary-eyed with my players, and I just found out that my stuff had been stolen from me, okay? Immediately after that, or as quickly as they could, the folks at Jackson State put out a statement and were like, no, Deion's things were misplaced. They have been found. They have been recovered. Everything's cool. Deion sees that and says, no, my stuff was stolen. A woman who works here witnessed it, but she was by herself, so she could not do anything. But my stuff was stolen. And all I'm saying is, after one game, here's Deion Sanders making it all about him. There's no other way to look at this. It's him making it all about him. He said it himself. He was just in the locker room. He was just teary-eyed. All this stuff, what a great moment. And then he decided to talk about the fact that somebody got him. And look, I've been got. It doesn't feel good. I totally understand feeling the way that he might have felt. But it wasn't a good look to bring that to the press conference in that way. It just wasn't. And nobody's talking about your players. Nobody's going to talk about the game. They're talking about this. And Deion is not some amateur. Deion is a media savvy man. You got to be aware enough, and I believe he is, to know that this would be the direction that he wound up going in. You know, and I want to be clear about something else with Deion. I think Deion believes that the work he does is good. I'm not saying it is or isn't, but like, I don't think he's a con artist. You know, like, I don't think he's saying, I care about these kids. And then when it's over, no, I think he cares. You know, I think that like Des Bryant was a guy, for example, that he worked with when he was younger. Like, I do believe that there's work he does and that absolutely demonstrates a level of care about people. But the level of it here is, this just wasn't the move to make. Knowing the way that this story could ultimately be manipulated. I just don't think that was a wise move, especially after the school was like, nah, right? We're going to go about this a different way, Deion. And Deion's like, no, we not. I'm going to talk about how my stuff got stolen. And I just don't think that was cool. I don't think it was terrible necessarily, because again, I'm not the one who got, right? If he got, however it happened to go. But nah, man, that wasn't the play. And so again, if Deion can make this about his players, it will be fantastic at Jackson State. But all you really see in public, generally speaking, with Deion is Deion making it about Deion. And I hope that this doesn't continue, but we are not off to a good start.
We know you can't be on top of all the news and information of the day. No need for the social media feeds. We got you. Now, if you haven't heard.
Today's If You Haven't Heard difference-making story is brought to you by CarMax. Don't just buy a car, love your car with the new CarMax Love Your Car Guarantee.
All right, this first story comes from business.
This is Emma Aukerman. I'm a reporter with Vice News. On February 16th, after a massive winter storm knocked out the power in Portland, Oregon, residents turned up at a local Fred Meyer to try and salvage a bunch of food, which some folks said on social media would be used to help people experiencing food insecurity. This was stuff like meat, cheese, juice, and more that the grocery store had thrown out because it didn't think it would be good anymore. But, according to the Oregonian, a local newspaper, residents reported that several cops were essentially guarding the dumpsters of food. This caused a stir in the city, which saw months of anti-racism protests this summer, some of which turned violent. The Portland Police Bureau said that they were called to respond to the gathering because people were arguing with employees and refusing to leave the property. Employees worried that there might be a physical confrontation, according to police, and said the food was spoiled. Cops showed up and then left once they believed there was, quote, no longer any threat of harm. At most, there were 11 officers in the scene, according to police, including a few trainees. For their part, Fred Meyer said that people at the store were concerned about people consuming the food and risking illness, adding that they donate millions of pounds of food each year.
So that is an interesting question to raise, is the food that got thrown out just totally not consumable, and then somebody might get sick and sue the company? I have to say, I would find that to be fair if that's what they were doing. However, if I'm the store, this is where the capitalism comes up, right? Because if you're keeping it real, you know that food's gonna spoil. But they gonna hold on to it until it actually spoils. Because before it spoils, it can be sold. But what they do is sell, right? Like, in a perfect world, it is, we're going to have to throw this food out, so you ought to come get some. But when you come get some, they're like, cool, that'll be $8.74. And then the people can't really do much with it because they can't keep it, you know? So like, honestly, I mean, this sounds like some Pollyanna type stuff, but I think there's something to it. Like, right, but like an hour or something before they knew their food was going to spoil, they should have just had a giveaway. Except, small problem. I don't think they're wrong about this part either. It would be some scrapping over that food.
It's a really precarious situation. There's a documentary that I think people would be interested in watching. It's on Amazon Prime, I believe, called Just Eat It, if you haven't seen it. It's about food waste. And this couple basically says, hey, over the course of the next 30 days, or over the course of the next 60 days, they're going to not dumpster dive, but kind of get only food that they can get for free. Basically, what's being given away, stuff that's past sell-by date, and what they found is kind of that food is good past a sell-by date, but only for like a certain length of time. It's absolutely astounding how much food gets wasted.
Yeah, man. All right, what we got next?
This next story comes from transportation.
I'm ABC News transportation correspondent Gio Benitez, and we're following the latest now on that mid-air emergency over the skies of Colorado. The NTSB saying metal fatigue may have caused that engine to blow apart shortly after takeoff. We saw that terrifying video, and now we're learning from the NTSB that debris from that engine actually hit the fuselage. That left a giant hole in the side of the 777. This could have been so much worse if that hit a fuel tank. Now, the NTSB says that they saw evidence of metal fatigue on one of the engine's blades that broke off mid-flight. Investigators say that broken blade then hit another. Now, most of the 777s with that specific engine from the company Pratt & Whitney, they have now been grounded around the world.
Yo, somebody in corporate at the airline is like, you gotta be kidding me, right? Like now we gotta, like... It's crazy they're running these flights anyway, but I mean, I guess they got to do it to a degree. But then they're like, damn, now we got to take all these jokers out. What was the other plane that they had to take out? The one that was blowing up?
Well, so people have to look at pictures of this because you've got the plane that's got the flaming engine.
Yes.
You know, and then you've got the plane that pieces fell off, debris fell off and landed in some dude's yard.
Yo, can you imagine like looking out the window and that happened?
And not even necessarily like, do you live by an airport, you know, because if you live by an airport, at least a small one, you hear about things happening sometimes where it's like, oh, the airplane missed its landing or whatever and hit this house.
Right.
You know, there's a small airport here in New Haven. You hear about that sometimes, you know, but if you don't even live by an airport and then all of a sudden you get a huge engine dropping in your front yard, you better hope Toto isn't out in the front yard.
Forget about Toto. Better be glad you're not in the front yard.
Mowing the lawn?
Yo, okay, I mean, that's some Final Destination type stuff, right? Like, I'm just out here mowing the lawn and I get hit by a falling engine from an airplane. Or imagine being on the plane, looking out the window and being like, yo, I could be wrong, but it looked like the engine was on fire and fell off.
Who's in charge of the cleanup of that? Delta? United? Pratt and Whitney?
Yeah, I got news for you. You're coming to get this engine. Like, I'm not. And somebody, like, whatever damage has been done in my yard, you're fixing it. I'll take you to the people's court if I got to.
I had Kentucky bluegrass in the front yard. Not any of this cheap stuff.
Well, no, hold up. It was in Colorado, right? They went legal there. Yo, you know what was growing in my front yard? $2 million worth of marijuana. You killed it all.
You just can't see it because it's burned to a crisp now.
That's right. That's right.
So this last story is an international story. The reporter wasn't able to join us, but I figured I'd just give a high level of it myself, and then you can react to it. So a rapper was arrested last Tuesday. His name is Pablo Hassel in Barcelona, Spain.
Hold on, Pablo Hassel?
Hassel.
Hassel, okay. I was about to say, wow, he's going the extra mile with Pablo Hassel.
So he was arrested this past Tuesday on a 2018 conviction under Spain's public security law, which bans the glorification of terrorist groups and insults against the Spanish monarchy. So authorities are citing politically inflammatory lyrics and social media posts for charging him. But his arrest immediately set off a couple of days of protests and sparked a big debate over freedom of expression. So thousands have taken to the streets, including over the weekend protesting the conviction and his 9-month sentence. Amnesty International has also defended him, whose online statements of authorities alleged criticized Spanish royalty and shown support for the ETA, which had waged a bloody decades-long campaign for independence, which is a Basque separatist group that officially disbanded in 2018. And supporters of the rapper have described the 2015 security law as a gag rule that has limited his freedom of expression. Spain's justice ministry has recently announced plans to reform the law to target only actions that encourage violence, though it is unclear what effect this could have on Hassel's case. But money.
All right, so that is from NPR, and I had much less come to mind for me about that story than stopping and thinking, is there a single popular musician who poses a threat to the establishment in 2021? Seriously, there, like, when you really stop and think about this, that, like, when you read back and you think about, like, the FBI and you hear about, like, the FBI had a file on John Lennon and stuff like that. And, it felt kind of crazy to think about as they saw, like, the Beatles or just rock and roll as a vehicle toward, you know, revolution or fomenting these ideas among people. And it really feels like, wow, you were really going the extra mile there, weren't you? But damn if it didn't, in some way, you make the argument work. Like, think about this. There is nothing like Public Enemy right now. There is nothing like Ice Cube right now. There is nothing like Rage Against the Machine right now. We have seen the last 7 years largely marked by protest in streets. And there is no real soundtrack from young people who have gotten like big with it, documenting the feelings and emotions that surround it. And on one level, you could say, well, it's because the label and the machine doesn't want you to hear that. And while that is probably true, this is 2021. Y'all are making a lot of these decisions yourselves about what's hot, like for SoundCloud and everything else. Like, you don't need a label or some establishment push in order to get these ideas out there. It's not happening. Like, it just isn't. And I don't know exactly who is to blame for that. But like, I hear about this dude over here doing that in Spain. There ain't nobody close to doing nothing like that in the United States in any form of music whatsoever. It's not there. Like, they have completely wiped that out of American popular music. Like, stop and think about how crazy that is. Like, okay, you get an album like Solange, The Seat of the Table Joint, right? Which is like very pro-black and talks a lot about, you know, but you understand what I'm saying. That ain't Fear of a Black Planet. You know, that ain't Evil Empire. It's not that. And you would think in these times that if nothing else, that stuff would become like retro cool. Mm-mm. The taste of the music consumer and the taste and whatever's pushing the people making the music, it ain't there. And that's strange, especially with how mad people are all the time.
Hey, this is Bomani. You have reached the Right Time voicemail. Say whatever you want. Get creative with it. But this is your place to talk back to the show. So talk back. Peace.
All right, Bomani. Voicemail segment for this week. There was a video over the weekend that caused quite the stir on Twitter. Do you want to set the scene for people?
Yeah, man. Cam Newton was at a 7-on-7 football tournament. Somebody bad little kid. He ain't like a little kid. And that's the key point. He like 15, 16, he looked like. He started like heckling Cam. He like, you know, you a free agent. And Cam responded to that. Like, he said free agent like it's an insult. And Cam responded, dude, I'm rich. Which, by the way, fair point. He's like, dude, I'm rich. And then the kid keeps going at him and tells Cam that he's ass. Like, he actually says that. And at the point, Cam is like, where's your dad? Where is your dad? And so somebody sent that clip out and they were like, Cam looks triggered. And he didn't look triggered at all. This is the thing about you dorky kids, right? Y'all think that y'all just get to say whatever you want to anybody. And if somebody says anything at all to you, that they are triggered. Like, they're not necessarily mad, because Cam, I bet, was like frustrated, but he wasn't mad. And he talked to him later. He was like, look, you got all these people looking, right? You getting the attention that you wanted. All right, cool. So y'all played today. What did you do? And they're like, yo, he got speed. He's like, okay, but what did you do? And the dude, they have nothing at all to say. And I was just amazed at all the people who were on, Cam shouldn't have said nothing to that kid, right? And so it got me to thinking, feel like most of us have been there. You're like 14, 15, 16, in that range. You start thinking you grown. And, you know, grown-ups be talking to you in some ways or whatever. You feel like they shouldn't talk to you like that no more. And you should be able to talk to them a different way. And they tell you to stop. And you keep going. And then you find out the hard way how grown folks respond to such things. And you realize you are not that grown yourself. And so we wanted to hear your stories about being a teenager and going one step too far and learning the hard way what all comes with being grown.
Our first one comes from Jarrell in Georgia.
So this is probably about 2003 or 4. I can't remember which one. My dad was in the Air Force, and so he had got activated to go overseas. So it's just me, my mom, and my sister. So, you know, it's just me. I'm the man of the house now, you know. So my uncle comes over, my mom's brother, and he's fixing one of our pipes because one of our pipes was leaking. And so my mom wants me to take out the trash. I'm playing my video game. And she's like, come check out the trash. I'm like, I'll come in a minute. And my mom's like, come take this trash out now. So I was like, I'll be out there in a minute. So So I come out, I'm like, man, I'm playing my game. I don't understand why you can't wait for me to take this trash out. So my uncle comes out. He said, hey, man, let me talk to your mama like that. I was like, hey, I'm not talking to you. I'm talking to my mom. Remember, I'm the man of the house. And I'm looking at my uncle. He looked at me. And I started talking to my mom. My mom was like, don't be talking to your uncle like that. Next thing I know, man, my uncle caught me with a quick two-piece to the side. And, man, I started grabbing my side. Next thing you know, he just pushed me over. He gets on top of me and said, boy, don't you ever in your life talk to your mama or me like that. And when you get back, I'm going to make sure I tell your daddy. And, man, I'll say this. That was when I realized I wasn't as grown as I thought I was.
Yo, let me tell you something. There's a long line of these stories that involve the phrase, and I said, I'm not talking to you. One of my homeboys was talking about his pops. And he just misunderstood like how marriage and family and stuff works, right? And so he was talking about, he said, he was like 15, 16, his pops caught him with one. And I was like, so what happened? He was like, well, I was having a disagreement with my mother. And I said to him, hold on, man, I'm not talking to you right now. Completely misunderstanding that everything you say in the house is talking to him. And it was a quick one.
People forget, too, when they're talking to their mom like that or they're talking to their dad like that, is that your dad is your mom's husband. Your mom is your dad's wife.
Yes.
Don't be talking about my wife like that.
Yep. Like that. That's part of the job. And see, one of the disconnects in discussing this story, by the way, is this one. I just remember being 14 years old and I popped off about something. And my brother, who is 13 years older than me, looking at me and saying, you know, you're big enough to get your ass whooped now, right? Because I always knew that I wasn't big. Like after a point, consequences come into play. Like I don't advise like actually beating up a teenager or something like that, right? But the only way you're going to learn how this could go is by feeling like it's there. That's it. Like, I feel like 15, 16, nah, you are responsible for the things that you say, depending on what that means, right? So I'm not being like you should abuse or beat up no kid, but put them up on the wall? Oh, yeah, fair game, fair game.
And this next story is a perfect example of that. It comes from Marvin CT.
Hey, Bomani, Gabe, what's up? Got a story. It was Mother's Day, probably about 1996, I want to say. We're at church, and so I go outside after church to, like, the let out where everyone, you know, meets up or whatever, and there's this younger guy, and we're cool, and I know him, and, you know, you're saying happy Mother's Day to all the mothers and all that, and I go up to him, and I'm, like, 12, and he's, like, maybe 25, and I say, happy Sucker's Day. I feel somebody snatch me from the back of my collar, and it's my grandmother. And she was like, I know you didn't say what I thought I heard you say. And so she was like, you got some nerve. You ain't on his level. And so I went up, like, and she took me over back to David and apologized. He was like, oh, no, that's cool. You know, that's all right. She was like, no, it ain't all right. He got too much mouth. And the rest of the day, like, we got home, happy Sucker's Day. You got some nerve. And she started gritting her teeth. She got mad every time she thought about it, Bo. And I was never like that anyway, but, oh, it was never again that I even fix my lips to even think the thought of disrespecting someone grown. And he was only 25. So, like, in my mind, I thought he was, like, young enough for me to play with like that. And my grandmother made it known that, nope, we're not playing that game.
No, man, that's the thing. Nope. You are not that grown. You are not. Yo, Why Not Us, a docuseries on North Carolina Central basketball that's on ESPN Plus. Y'all check it out. Lavelle Moten, the head coach at North Carolina Central, he had a line, like, everybody want what it look like, don't nobody want what it feel like. That's what being grown is. Like, when you like 13, 14, you want what it look like. But you don't want what it feel like.
This last one comes from Derek in Harlem.
So I'm the youngest of three brothers. My middle brother and my father always go back and forth for who wants the last word. So my brother was 18. He wanted to take the car. My dad just got home from work. My dad used to drive the bus 12-hour shifts a day. So my dad's telling him no, no, no. He says no, and he walks away. As he walks away, my brother goes, you know what? F*** you. So I'm sitting downstairs. And I see it and my eyes light up like, ooh, because my father stopped as soon as he heard it. There was a silent pause in the living room. In my head, I'm like, oh, snap, this is about to go down. Now I'm thinking, you know, my brother's, what, 18, 19 at the time. Young version of my father, they're about the same height, same size. I'm thinking, my brother got this. You know, he young, he got this. My father turns around and said, what you say to me? My brother said it again. Fuck you. So my father calmly walks towards my brother. My eyes are getting giddy because I know we about to see a fight. So I'm just sitting there, wide open eyes. The next thing I know, my father is just MMA-ing before MMA even existed on my brother. And the only person that could have stopped was my mother. She comes running downstairs and goes, what's going on? And my father said, he just told me to go f*** myself. And then my mother says, oh. And then she walks away. And from there on, I learned about grown man strength. And I wrote down in my book not to curse out my father. And that's when I learned about getting put in your place.
Dog, I hit my brother with a cue when I was 14. There was some distance between us. There was also a point. And so the way the house is set up, we were in like the room that we ate in, and it had a tile floor. And off of that was the laundry room. And you get to the laundry room and then you go past that. And there was a room that was over the garage, right? But there was a hallway from the laundry room to the room that goes over the garage. So I did that, and there was some distance. And my plan was just to say, fuck you, and turn around, you know, and walk away. However, after delivering those words and that point, there wasn't as much distance between us as there had been when I first turned around. And now I got to run. So I'm in socks. And so there's some slippery going on here, trying to turn this corner. And I try to get up those steps, and I just feel that snatch. And that pulled down, there was no like actual act of violence that took place, right? But there was no getting away. I will tell you another story that one of my homeboys tells. This is maybe the best story I've ever heard in this line of stuff. So my man, he lives in the Bay, and I think he was in San Jose. He's getting big, he's getting a little grown, and you know, he's living with his mom. His dad didn't live with him. He decided he was going out one night, right? Didn't ask his mom, didn't say nothing. He just like, I'm going out. So he left. I don't know what hour he came back, but it was a late hour. He came back and he said he remembered. He opened the front door. He said he looked at his mom. She was just sitting on the couch. He said it. He was like, psh, threw his hand up. Kept walking to the bedroom. He said he went in the bedroom, got in there, hit that light switch. And who is there but his dad? Gabe, his dad lived in Los Angeles.
That is not a quick trip.
Okay. I will also tell you, Gabe, that his dad was a Black Panther and a bodybuilder.
All right.
And so he gets in the room, and the last thing in the world that he expects to see is there. The actual real live boogeyman. Right? Like this is the boogeyman is in my room. And the boogeyman snatched him by the throat, put him up on the wall, had his feet swanking below. And this is my thing. I don't hear those stories and think I'm hearing anything inappropriate, right? Like maybe I am operating on some antiquated notion of what it is. But I feel like when you are at that age, it's kind of like you go play ball with grown folks, right? You might catch an elbow to the jaw because you're playing ball with grown folks. Should you elbow the 16-year-old? 16-year-old shouldn't have been out here playing with grown folks. Now should he? But hey, ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing a couple times a week. My man Gabe Bassan handles everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Also, thanks to CarMax. Thank you to our If You Haven't Heard contributors. Thanks to Emma Ackerman of Vice News. Check out her story on food shortages and hunger in Portland at vice.com. Also, thank you, Gio Benitez, transportation reporter at ABC News. Check out An Engine Failure Out of the Sky in Denver. Remember, subscribe to The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater, and we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.